This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Now, we recently received this Why Wisconsin question from a listener.
Hi, my name is Leah Jaber. I'm a senior at Madison East High School. And my question is, how exactly did Mount Horeb become the troll capital of the world? And is the Norwegian culture still so alive and prevalent?
Central Time producer Tim Peterson visited the troll capital itself to get the story, and you'll be able to hear audio from that visit in a forthcoming Wisconsin Life piece. He also talked to Jim Leary, Emeritus Professor of Folklore and Scandinavian Studies at UW-Madison. Jim co-founded the Center for the Study of Upper Midwestern Cultures. He also happens to be a Mount Horeb resident since the late 1980s. Here's a listen to their conversation.
So, Jim, let's start with answering the second question first. When did the village of Mount Horeb become a center for Norwegian culture in Wisconsin?
Mount Horeb was a strong area of Norwegian settlement in the mid-19th century, along with the Koshkonong Prairie and around Stoughton. And in Mount Horeb and the hinterland surrounding it and extending out to Blue Mounds was also an area of concentrated early Norwegian settlement, and then there was a kind of a second wave in the late 19th century with newcomers sometimes coming to work as hired workers for the more settled Norwegians. So it's right there in a kind of a little belt of historic Norwegian settlement.
And we're going to get to trolls, obviously, but what are some other elements of Norwegian culture that someone would see if they walk around or spend time in Mount Horeb?
Well, the face of the village has a lot that says Norwegian. On the east end, there's a big water tower with rose mauling, this stylized Norwegian floral painting. And there are banners on the light standards through the village that have rose mauling motifs and sometimes velkommen, you know, welcome in Norwegian. The little Chamber of Commerce building on the main street, and also the old kind of railroad depot rest area on what is now the bike trail, have motifs from Stavkirke or stave churches, wooden churches. And then there's the prominent open house imports, the Scandinavian gift shop with trolls out front, and also a stabur, a Norwegian log storage building that Nels Diller made.
And that's, you know, things that we could see if we walked around today, but are there kind of things that were erected by these immigrants that you mentioned earlier and that are kind of still around, or has there been sort of a reimagining or trying to come back to that, those cultural items in later times?
Well, both, really. You know, there is what specialists refer to as intangible cultural heritage, the stuff that, you know, is ephemeral, or you don't, it's not a building or something like that. So people having coffee saying expressions like oofta, these expressions of kind of amazement or exasperation, you know, telling an occasional Oli and Lina yolk, and you know, slipping into dialect. There were old customs like julevoking, this kind of Christmas masquerading that used to happen well into the 1950s and early 60s in and around Mount Horeb, of dressing up and in disguise and barging in on your neighbors. There's a strong Sons of Norway lodge. There's Norwegian Lutheran presence in several of the Lutheran churches. So all of that stuff is kind of intangible or behind the scenes, and you know, you have to experience it by being around. But then, you know, there's this public face, and so, you know, Mount Horeb, there are Swiss people, there are Germans, there are Irish, there are Cornish in the historical settlement, but a plurality of Norwegians. And of course, outside the village was Little Norway, a long-standing tourist site, and for maybe 30 years or so into the 90s, a little village pageant, Song of Norway, based on the life of Edvard Grieg, who composed, among other things, In the Hall of the Mountain King, that had to do with trolls. And so, you know, those kinds of public-facing elements that say Norwegian were there, and in the way that people associate New Glarus with Swiss identity, for example, there are these community identities that sometimes tie in with ethnicity, and Mount Horeb has chosen to promote Norwegianness.
We're talking with Jim Leary, Professor Emeritus of Folklore and Scandinavian Studies at UW-Madison, also a longtime Mount Horeb resident himself, and we're answering a Wisconsin question about Mount Horeb, its Norwegian culture, and its trolls. So, Jim, remind us from folklore, what exactly is a troll?
Well, trolls are these ugly and somewhat dim-witted and physically powerful ancient figures who are associated with Norway's pagan past and often its environment, you know, dwelling in caves and mountains and sometimes in forests. And they also tie in with other creatures, so-called underjordiske, these underground people, among them the Huldr, the hidden people who sometimes have the appearances of good-looking human beings, but they have the tails of cows. And so, you know, there are different figures associated with the Norwegian landscape. And if you're out there and, you know, barging into their territory, in the case of trolls, you might be taken into the mountain, or mm-hmm. they might come and raid your place if you're encroaching on theirs.
And so, I mean, that doesn't really sound like something you'd want to have lining the streets of your town necessarily, but that's the case in Mount Horeb. How did Mount Horeb actually become the troll capital officially of the world?
Well, that's, of course, a self-anointed regal title. But in the 70s, folks in Mount Horeb were realizing that the construction of the 18-151 bypass would route traffic away from their town, and how could they get people to come in? And so there was a meeting of minds about what kind of theme to emphasize, and they did surveys, and Norwegianness seemed to be something that they could ballyhoo a little bit. And then there's the clever play on words between tollway and trollway, you could take the trollway, you know, off of the main highway, and trolls, of course, have this long association with Norway, and they were particularly popularized in 19th century illustrated collections of folk tales by P.C. Asbjørnsen and Jørgen Mue. So the troll became this, in the 19th and early 20th century, this kind of visible symbol of Norwegian folklore, and people in Mount Horeb could draw on it. But, you know, you have this distance in time and space, and so, you know, the terrifying creature of the past that you might recoil from in horror becomes something, you know, friendly and cuddly, and little children want little troll toys with a goofy hair and rubbery skin rather than running away from them as sources of terrible nightmares.
And Jim, I have to ask you, do you have a favorite troll around Mount Horeb?
Ah, you know, I love Mike Feeney's old troll carvings.
Yes.
And then there was a magnificent person, Oljana Venden Kanin, mm-hmm. and she used to make little troll sculptures out of Sculpey and coat hangers, and she would make clothing for them. She also made Barbie clothes on the side, but she made them for people in the different professions in Mount Horeb. And so there'd be one in the barber shop and one in the dentist office, and you know, a dentist troll and a butcher shop troll. And I loved her work as well.
Mm. Jim, thank you so much for sharing this with us today.
My pleasure.
That was Jim Leary, Emeritus Professor of Folklore and Scandinavian Studies at UW-Madison. Central Time producer Tim Peterson talked to them about the history and prevalence of Norwegian culture in the village of Mount Horeb and why they've got such a thing for trolls. This conversation came from an audience question as part of the Why Wisconsin question. Submit your question and we might answer it in a future story. Go to wpr.org/Wisconsin. That's like W-H-Y, Wisconsin.